Well, the NBA playoffs are in full swing. Some of the best first-round matchups I think we've had in a number of years. Heaps to talk about. Let's get right into it on Third and Five. All right, gents, welcome into Third and Five, episode 68, I think, before our milestone.
Oh, that's a letdown. I was hoping it was going to be 69 and we're going to lead into like some weird jokes, but no, what a letdown.
I think we're it might actually be 69. I've lost count. I stopped once we hit 50. It's like I stopped counting. But it's been a lot. I'm surprised we're still going, which is impressive. And
I'm going to quickly find foolish. Out. I'm going to quickly find out. This is episode 69.
Hey.
Oh, yeah. Hey. Nice. Starting off episode 69 with a bang.
On a classy, classy note. Nice. Well, where do we go with that? Here we are, episode 69. James Thwaites, Dave Rice, myself, Simon Hampton, recording various spots around Brooklyn. Gentlemen, I think the NBA, like, we're going to dive into the NBA playoffs pretty shortly, but I think this is almost the best time of the NBA, particularly when you have some good first-round matchups, because there's just, like, three really good games on each night at the moment.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's fantastic.
And now we've got NHL starting tonight as well. We're recording on a Monday. So it's just this chaotic season of just being able to watch so much sport, and it's amazing. And it's, like, the NBA playoffs have been great. There's been a lot of drama already, both on and off the court, which we'll dive into. E40 being kicked out of an arena. Sacramento Kings fans going absolutely nuts outside their stadium, which was incredible. And we didn't even get a chance to talk about DeMar DeRozan's daughter, who last week in
video you posted.
Oh, how good was this? So basically, DeMar DeRozan's daughter was at the game when the who were the Bulls playing? Raptors.
Yeah.
So it was in Toronto.
Van Fleet.
Yeah, and DeMar DeRozan's daughter just screaming at the top of her lungs every time the Raptors went for a free throw. They only shot 50%, so obviously works. Hopefully they gave her a game ball after that. That was incredible.
It was quite funny. I mean, she was sitting right down under the hoop, basically.
And isn't she like a 10-year-old? Is she 10-year-old or something? So she would probably have quite a high pitch. Like, it would have been quite an off-putting, like, quite surprising to hear it. Like, so what's the normal free throw percentage of a game for teams? I'd assume it's somewhere in the 70s. Would be my guess.
Yeah, that'd be about right.
To be that much lower than the average is clearly, yeah. You have to put it down to it.
Sometimes listeners of the pod, myself, Dave, and Simon go and play tennis here in Brooklyn. Dave, you might have to bring your daughter down when she's old enough just so she can start screaming every time we hit the ball just to, like, put us off so you can finally win some games, mate.
I'll take it.
Dwayne, so you've been on. We've been posting some great content. I say we. Some great content on the Third and Five Instagram page. You've got to check it out if you're not liking that at the moment. We are the one stop shop for great memes, great content on Instagram. You've got to follow us at the moment.
Yeah, absolutely. And I'll because Dave and Simon sometimes, like, don't check it when I post, I'll put in some cheeky digs to the lads as well, which is always good to spot.
I actually saw one today. It was about posted about, and I was actually just gonna respond and call you out, but then I think it was the way I read it, and I was like, lucky I backtracked. So I'm not afraid to do some heckling. It'll be in my own handle. I won't be hiding.
Well, we'll get you posting as well, Dave.
Yeah, exactly. Speaking of heckling, I heckled you both on the page as well, because we did our predictions, and I realized I was the only one that backed the Nets, which is completely idiotic. But I'm a Nets fan. Yeah. You too, not back in the Nets. So, get out. Go move into Manhattan.
But, I mean,
there was also a lot of agreeing with each other on that predictions page. It was kind of disappointing.
I think there was enough variability. I think there'll be an outright winner of the three of us, or at least it'll be score out of eight. I think they'll be different.
I'm looking forward to winning and taking my victory lap in the next few weeks because I, speaking of victory laps, none of us could take a victory lap on the Heat because they got absolutely smashed by the Hawks in that first play-in game for that 7-8 spot. I don't think any of us saw that coming. What a terrible game that was.
Yeah, we missed. We whiffed on that one. We
Yeah, so
swung at a
I,
fast
we
foot
didn't
in the
really
middle.
take the we didn't really take the plan seriously. It was the predictions were most important for the
No,
first round.
we were just warming up in this practice. This is the real stuff begins in the first round. The Heat, I mean, well, let's kick off and let's get into the Eastern Conference to start things off. The Heat against the Bucks, I think, you know, we I think we would probably all still say the Bucks are still the favorites to win this series, but and I know that the Heat, sorry, the Bucks were without Giannis for a lot of game one, but to get a win in Milwaukee is a huge first win for Miami there.
Yeah, it is a massive one, and probably one that I really didn't see coming, and I don't think a lot of people did on paper. A lot of people were talking at the end of last week, basically saying, the Heat have been playing games, the Bucks haven't played in over a week. I kind of didn't buy into it too much, but obviously, maybe that did play and have a bit of an effect in that first game. But I don't know. I again this is, I'm going to jinx this. This is absolutely going to go the other way now. I just don't think the Heat have what it takes to beat the Bucks in a 7-game series. Like Tyler Herro's now out. He broke his hand. Giannis obviously was out for a little bit of the game, well, the entire game, with a sore back. Looks like he'll come back for game two. What it comes down to me is kind of bench depth. And that Bucks team that played together, that's pretty standard team they've had for the last 2 years. And I mean standard as in they haven't made too many moves. And I just don't see Kevin Love from the now Miami Heat having a game like he did over the weekend. I just don't think he keeps up that consistency. He's probably had two good games since he's been at the Heat. So watch this space.
I think the Heat have been a fairly like similar side for the last few years, and they've had pretty good playoff runs. I think it was kind of mentioned in the pod last week that they are a team that, we were making the assumption that they were going to get the seventh seed and play the Celtics, and just they were going to be an annoying team that just because they do have playoff history in the last 5 years, that they could, be a real kind of challenge. I mean, to me, it's a pretty straightforward thing. If Giannis is 100%, not that he could play game two, three, if he's actually back and is fine, I think the Bucks get through. It's simple as that. I think the Heat could really push them close, if not win, if Giannis is a very limited participant or half the way that he can play when he is on.
The
I do
Heat's
like
always an
them.
interesting one as well because it's only like a few years ago that they're actually in the NBA final. They played obviously the Lakers in the bubble. Jimmy Butler is, one of the hardest people to stop in the league, for sure. It's just,
Well,
yeah, kind of the supporting cast around him.
I mean, I would add though that last year they were a Jimmy Butler open three away from knocking out the Celtics. So
Very good point.
they are not. I don't think they're great. And they haven't looked good this year. I think they're better than a first round exit though. And I think if they were in sixth spot, then going into a series against the 76ers, I would think that would be quite an interesting series. But I think if the Bucks are at full strength, I think Dave, you're spot on. I think the Bucks are getting this done. Whether it's five games, six games, seven games, I think they'll find a way to get past them. But I think the Heat are a team that, you know, maybe is not good enough to knock over the Celtics and Bucks this year, but could probably match up quite nicely against just about any other team in the East, in the playoffs. So it's still going to be an interesting series though to follow that one, particularly with Miami getting that first road win. The other top seed is the Celtics against the Hawks. I think we can pretty much brush over this. I think the Celtics are gonna breeze through this series. Any opposing views to that?
Not
Nope.
opposing. I feel like the kind of interactions with Trae Young on that team definitely wouldn't surprise me if they look to shift Trae Young in the offseason.
I don't
Yeah,
think the Celtic, yeah.
that's a sweep if you've ever seen one. Like what you'd expect.
With the
I
Celtics not
mean,
even getting into top gear, I don't think.
yeah. No.
Let's get closer to home then. 76ers Nets. 121-101 to the 76ers in game one. Game two is tonight, so we'll have a result by the time you're more than likely listening to this, but I mean, again, as much as we want to say the Nets are a chance here, I do think the 76ers are pretty clear favorites in this.
Yeah, definitely after the way that they played. Basically, the Nets walked into this with a pretty good game plan, which is double up Embiid, force other players to make shots. Unfortunately for the Nets, they were just shooting just absolutely on fire from three. Yeah. The other thing that's like a big, big problem for the Nets, which was kind of highlighted again over in that game, Mikal Bridges is fantastic. He can absolutely lead that team in yeah. scoring every game. Cam Johnson stepped up as well. Spencer Dinwiddie was awful. And if there is one spot that the Nets need to work on in the offseason, it's going to be at that point guard position. Spencer Dinwiddie was just doing some awful things, like it just trying to throw up lobs to Daron Sharp and Claxton. They were just completely missing. He's playing ISO ball way too much. It's giving me kind of freak flashbacks to Kyrie Irving, but he just doesn't have the skill of Kyrie Irving, you know, where he can, you know, turn it into points. So it's unfortunate that game, nobody else was really firing. You know, Finney Smith wasn't having a good game. Claxton only had 5 points. He was just getting, he can't contain Embiid. That's super clear. And then off the bench, the highest scoring person coming off the bench was Seth Curry with 10 points. That's never going to beat that 76ers team, especially when you've got Embiid, Harden, you know, Tobias Harris, Maxey, and then, you know, their bench, you know, with George Niang and others.
Yeah, I think the Nets will surely, I'd like to maintain that sort of tactic where you basically are shutting down Embiid with the double team. And like, it's unlikely that I think I just had a look at the stats. They shot pretty much 50% and made 21 threes. As a team, and that's just not sustainable in a series. It's unlikely to happen again where they're going to run that hot. So, yeah, you've just got to kind of stick to the game plan, which they've clearly come, you know, going into that series, that's what they wanted to do. So that will be kind of the fascinating thing to sort of watch unfold, to be honest, is does Jacques Vaughan, does he maintain that, you know, stick to what he's, you know, the team or the coaches have decided, or is he going to alter that to try and, you know, mix things up. But
yeah, it's definitely a series that we probably need to keep an eye on because it could be a sweep for sure.
Mm. You going to game three or four?
I am not. I'm going to wait till day of and just see, because I just feel like realistically it's probably going to be a sweep, and you know those game four tickets will probably go for cheap. So that's my true plan as a Nets fan.
Bates has also come into the baseball on Friday with a few of us, and so to be committing to a 1 p.m. Saturday game anywhere near, other than on the day, is, you know.
He'll be asleep in the third inning with 9 hours of sleep ahead of him. He'll be fresh and recharged and ready to go.
I need 12 hours sleep in my old age, mate.
Let's leave the final series, maybe even the best series in the East now. Knicks, Cavs. Knicks getting the win over the Cavs in game one, the fifth seed against the fourth seed. 101-97, very close game. I can see this series going either way.
Yeah, it's an interesting one to look at because obviously a lot of people, not just us, thought that this game has high potential to go to a game seven. But I guess like what we didn't expect was Julius Randle to come back healthy for game one. I, you know, didn't know if he was going to play and just look so dominant as well. Brunson obviously led all scoring. He looked absolutely unstoppable. Hart was great. Hart is questionable for game two, or doubtful, I should say, which is going to be a big impact for that one. And it's good to see, you know, some of the guys on the bench getting strong minutes as well. They only pulled four guys off the bench, which is pretty insane for a playoff game. On the flip side, when you're starting to look at Cleveland, what they're definitely missing is Mobley. He just didn't look great. You know, he only managed to get 8 points. He played 37 minutes, managed to get 11 boards though, but their key is going to be able to get Mobley rolling a bit more and getting a bit more points. So it's not just coming down to Mitchell and Garland.
Yep, I agree. I think it's, I think for the Knicks, it's great to get that away win. We know it's going to be incredible atmosphere and a, you know, effectively a sixth player, we'll call it, on the court in terms of the Madison Square crowd. You know, so for the Knicks, a simplistic way of looking at the series is they just need to take care of business at home, because they've got three home games out of the next potential six. You win all of the home games, you win it. But I could easily see this going seven. So, maybe the Cavs are going to pick up an away win somewhere. So it's a great start to the series, and I think it is good when you've got the lowest seed away team winning that, sort of causing that little minor upset, winning on the road.
How good was the Jalen Brunson signing? I mean, the guy, the Knicks were criticized at the time for overpaying for this guy, and now he looks underpaid.
Yeah, there's two contracts in the NBA that I just think are just absolutely insane when you think about it. Jalen Brunson, with what they paid and the production he's having, and then Mikal Bridges. And taking my bias out of that, he's in the first year of a 4-year, $90 million deal, and he's basically putting up, close to 30 points a game since he's been in Brooklyn. And you just can't ask with that. But this Brunson thing's incredible, like just awesome to see. And even though that they got lost a pick, I think, due to in quotation marks tampering, because they hired his dad and things like that. It's totally worth it at the end of the day.
Let's move out west. Start with the shit one. Nuggets, Timberwolves. Nuggets winning by 30 points. I mean,
I mean, Jokic didn't even look like he was breaking a sweat in that game. Like, I didn't stay up. It was a bit late, and for a variety of reasons. One being that I thought the Nuggets were going to steamroll them, but Jokic, only had 13 points, 14 rebounds, and six assists. With the rest of the points coming from other team members. In fact, he was the sixth highest scorer on the Nuggets, which is exactly what you want. This trade that the Timberwolves did for Rudy Gobert will have to go down as one of the worst trades in NBA history. At the beginning of the season, they would have had so much hope, and they're probably going to get swept here by the Nuggets. I just don't see there being any way out, unfortunately for them. Anthony Edwards was doing all he could, but Karl-Anthony Towns, 1 from 7 from the 3-point line, never going to get it done. And Rudy Gobert just getting absolutely monstered all game. He was just absolutely beaten up, and he looked way out of place there. And you just can't fix that when you're in a postseason and when you're in a playoff series like that.
And so for Denver, I mean, Denver's got to have these aspirations to, you can't, in the NBA, you can never look too far ahead, but they just probably just want to manage their guys and be absolutely fit and firing for that second series. They should be able to walk past this Timberwolves team. And yeah, like you said, Jokic didn't have to be very productive at all. So if they can, manage his minutes a little bit and just have everyone, to be sort of in top condition for what will be a far more challenging, second round series. So, and that probably applies to the Celtics as well, who we're thinking is going to have a pretty easy series.
Well, the team the Nuggets will face, assuming they do go through, will be either the Suns or the Clippers. And that is shaping up as a doozy of a series. And that could easily go to seven games, I think. The Clippers winning game one, 115 to 110. I don't know if we necessarily saw that one coming. Kawhi Leonard, 42 minutes, 38 points. I saw someone on the Clippers was quoted as saying that's why they rested Kawhi a lot. Was so that he could play 42 minutes. And
We
he
put we
put in a big shift.
he did put in a big shift. We shared that on our socials as well. So another plug for
Yeah, that's where I
Instagram.
saw it.
But what an absolute surprise. I definitely didn't see this one coming at all, especially because the Clippers have Paul George out, who's unlikely to return to this series or even play in the series because he didn't play the first one. It was pretty interesting watching though. Kevin Durant started off very shaky. He ended up with 27 points. He didn't get any points in the first quarter at all, and he played almost 11 minutes. So their key to success is obviously getting KD moving along fast. Unfortunately, it kind of gave me throwback to watching the Nets when KD was on there, where he's just putting in a lot of minutes, and kind of all the offense was going on there. Took Booker. Obviously, Booker had a better first quarter than he did. But their bench points as well just absolutely fell apart. And this was one of the things that we raised earlier on in the year, going into the playoffs, that the Suns don't have a deep bench anymore. So, when you've got somebody that like Kawhi Leonard who can, work both ends of the floor, and then Russell Westbrook as well, helping out with rebounding and assists, it's makes things a bit different.
I think it's the best series of the whole NBA first round, like the one to be most excited about. I remember watching that sort of the whole third quarter into the fourth quarter. KD and Leonard were just marking each other, and it was just such elite basketball. And, two good defenders and just elite scoring, able to get the job done. It was just like unbelievable to watch, just tit for tat stuff. And that's just such a good sort of like appetizer to what the rest of the series is going to show. It's great to see, yeah, again, the slight underdog getting the job done on the road. That's thrown the sort of whole series into, could go anyway now. I actually think kind of the difference was Russell Westbrook in the fourth quarter, probably the last 6 minutes, like the second half of the fourth quarter, was a man possessed defensively. Some of the shots he was putting up were like kind of embarrassing, but on offense, but defensively, he was making play after play. Just been a menace making steals. And he actually, you guys have probably seen the clip, like he made an incredible like block, may have been a foul, he might have clipped the hand, but block and then flick the ball back into Booker, which won the game. Booker's like actually got his hands up, complained to the ref, and that's a huge play. And it's like to have a guy that's a sixth man or bench player making that sort of impact late in the game, that's huge, especially with Paul George out.
Well, I think one of the other things as well with Russell Westbrook, apart from him getting called Westbrook by a fan and then threatening to fucking beat the shit out of a fan on his way after the game. But I think one of the key things that a lot of people forget is Russell Wilson has played Chris Paul and Chris Paul's teams for fucking years in the playoffs, and he's shut them down every time. I don't think he's actually lost a playoff series to Chris Paul at all. So just the fact that he knows exactly how to guard the guy because he's been playing these 7-game series against him, obviously when he was at the Thunder and then moving to other teams, like probably does say a lot. So it'll be an interesting series. I don't
Great
know if the
series.
Clippers can actually take it out. I'm still going for the Suns here, but hopefully it's a bit tighter than we originally thought it was going to be.
For sure, I think.
I think the next two series that I'm about to talk about can also go to 7 games. Start the Lakers and Grizzlies. Lakers getting it done by 16 points over the Grizzlies in Memphis last night. The Lakers' top two scorers, as you'd expect, Austin Reaves and Rui Hachimura. I mean, they came from behind as well. 12-point advantage in the third quarter, 10-point advantage in the fourth quarter to get the win. I know you guys have really talked up the Lakers, but it was a really impressive performance from them.
It really was. And like, to be honest, of course it came from Reaves and Hachimura, because that's exactly what we all thought was going to happen.
Exactly.
We were talking a week ago about how Anthony Davis matching up against that Grizzlies team without a Steven Adams was always going to cause the Grizzlies problems. But the fact that Anthony Davis and LeBron James actually started to have a pretty shit, second half, and these other two guys just stepped up and just took it away was absolutely insane to watch. The Grizzlies are in real trouble now as well, because Ja Morant potentially doubtful for game two. We'll see. We'll probably know more exactly when this pod is posted. But if Ja's down, there is no way in hell they're getting past this Lakers team. So again, Lakers are probably one of the luckiest teams in the playoffs this year for sure.
So no updates today as to any of the injuries.
Just said the head coach for the Grizzlies came out and just said that Ja's still pretty beaten up. So no. And this is gamesmanship to a certain extent as well. They're not gonna, reveal if somebody's out or doubtful till, they have to. So
Doesn't look good for them though. The Grizzlies losing at home as well, where they've been so good this year, and having to now go on the road and get it done where they haven't been so good.
but I mean, what do you mean by lucky for the Lakers?
Lucky that they
Do
were
you just mean
playing a
because Jar's
team.
out injured?
Well, Steven Adams was out in the first place, which gave them, I think, a big heads up. And then the fact that, they have a revamped team, going into the playoffs with D'Angelo Russell, who started performing good, and now potentially play a Grizzlies team without Ja Morant.
Yeah, but I mean that's just one round. Like I think people before Ja Morant got injured, I think there was a fair amount of, people getting behind the Lakers and what they had. And I think, yeah, Steve Adams played a part in that. But I just, yeah, I mean, it's only the first round. But let's move. What's the next round that we have next
The No-Cal Derby,
matchup?
the Warriors Kings, 126-123. The Kings getting it done in Sacramento at home.
Who knew that home field advantage would play into that, huh, Dave?
What do you mean? I didn't say the Warriors would win in four.
No, but you definitely said that
Warriors would come back and win
record
this.
away from home was not
Yeah,
something to
okay.
consider.
Well, I'll support myself here. So the Warriors that have been awful all year, maybe 8 wins away from home, pushed a team with that sort of support and momentum to that close to an Andrew Wiggins open three away from winning a game. So I'd argue that that's the concern for the Kings is the Warriors are only going to get better.
Mate, I'm keeping receipts. Dave Rice quote from a few weeks ago, but they still lost, so it's still a bad bet. So Warriors fucking lost.
No,
You are right.
again,
You
not
are right
individual
though,
game.
Dave.
I'm talking about the series.
Yeah, no, you are right though, Dave. Like it was a fucking great game. I think that was the
Incredible
best game the
game.
NBA I've watched in like a long, long time. I think there are a couple of things. Obviously, Wiggins needs to get more minutes. Curry needs to get more minutes. That was a big problem for them. The Wiggins open three towards the end. That was a problem. But just kind of that fourth quarter, like just when Klay Thompson and Steph Curry just switched it on and were just nailing these threes. I think the Warriors' key to winning is going to be paying more attention to De'Aaron Fox. They probably need to give him more respect than they've given him in that first game, because otherwise he's just going to keep doing what he's doing. Who knows if Malik Monk will continue to have games like he did. Obviously, that huge high scoring game, about a month or so ago, Malik Monk had a huge game there. But it's going to be a great series. It's, feels like it's going to come down to those close games.
Did you know this was the first playoff game in Sacramento since April 30th, 2006?
Jesus. How old were you then, mate? Three? Four?
Oh, don't go there. Yeah, three, two, or
Yeah.
something like that.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I mean, it was always going to be a massive occasion in Sacramento. For them, I still favor the Warriors in this series. I still think they end up getting it done. I think their quality, particularly at home. And particularly when it comes to a down to the wire in game six and seven will be enough to get it done. But an impressive start from the Kings.
That's the other thing we've spoken a lot about the Warriors, how bad they've been away. But if you look for them to be where they finished, they had an incredible home record. So I think maybe the Nuggets might have been the only, possibly the Grizzlies, the only teams that had better home records. I'm talking about they probably had 33, 34, maybe more wins at home. So out of their 41. So yeah. So that's the other thing is yes, they've been awful on the road, but you could probably bank on them being near unbeatable back at home. So that
Well,
game 6-7 becomes huge.
if
Yeah.
they don't win the playoffs this year, they could maybe win the NBA in-season tournament next year. This has been discussed for a number of years, I think. We've seen rumors going around, but Woj tweeting today, 2023-24 NBA in-season tournament schedule is expected to include quarters, semis, and finals in early December. Prize money, 500K per player on winning team. 200K per player on runner-up, 100K per on a semi-final loser, and 50K per quarter loser. Now, I presume, I don't know the actual details about how this starts. I imagine it's just the top eight teams at the time of the tournament.
This is the thing, right? This is fucking stupid. I really, really hate this idea. As a fan of the Nets, can you imagine going to a Knicks fan and just being like, "Oh, we won the in-season tournament. Look at our trophy." Nobody's gonna give a shit. It's not
It can't
like
be
you're
called
looking at.
the in-season tournament as well. It
No,
it
and it's
needs
not
to.
like you're looking at the fandom that follows something like the FA Cup in the UK. There needs to be more to it. There needs to be more to play for. Like if you're looking at some of these superstars that are earning, $30, $40 million a year, why do they give a shit about $500,000? Like, I mean, it sounds ridiculous, but some of those other players definitely would. But that are on, two-way contracts and things like that.
And those are the players that will be playing in the in-season tournament.
Yeah, probably. You know, the thing is, like, with this, as soon as it came out today, and I messaged you two both about it, they need to make it more meaningful. And I don't know what that is, whether it's, giving the winner and a runner-up, a guaranteed play-in spot for the play-in tournament. There just needs to be more value to it, especially from a fan's point of view. Like, I don't see anyone really caring about it.
Are they intending, have they talked about where the games are going to be played, or, like, is it all in one city, or is it
no,
like
it'll be a away? Different arena. Home away, I think, is the format. I mean, it's 2024, so it is a while away, but
yeah. I'm not against, like, as you said, trying to use the FA Cup. The way that the FA Cup is done, the reason that, I mean, one, that's got history and long running, it's been around forever, so that's something you can't just create. But the way the FA Cup's done is the first couple of rounds is like every sort of amateur team kind of competes, and they're not televised per se, but there's a whole lot of games going on in the background to sort of whittle down, I guess, the best amateur teams in the, and then I think the third round has been all the professional teams join, but generally third, fourth, and maybe even fifth round, the top teams are not, they're playing their sort of under 23s or their young guys that aren't starting. And I feel like that's, could they somehow do that, where you've kind of, because I'm sure there's an incredible standard of basketball around the country, like amateur level, where you could have that. And then that the Lakers aren't going to have LeBron and Davis playing when they sort of join. It will be, so it's just this kind of competition going on. That's maybe something, using that FA Cup style. And then you start to bring in the televised once it gets to quarters. But because, everyone's going to get behind a fairy tale where it's like a team of like a non-professional team, whether that's probably not really feasible that they do go far. But
the thing is, people get around the FA Cup because it's historic. And if you try to drop in the FA Cup into the Premier League season right now, nobody would give a shit and they'd all play their reserves. And so it's hard because it's like, I mean, I think that's the best way to do it, Dave. Like, I think that's the best way to create some sort of like storyline to it and make it kind of interesting beyond just having, players paying for a few hundred extra grand, which I don't think is going to do anything. But I think it's just so hard to like create a new competition that fans care about when there's no real prestige or tradition there.
Yeah, and like, you're right. If you're looking at this, there is a great way to do it. Exactly like Dave and Simon, you both hinted at. Get your G League teams, start them off on a similar tournament, and then hoist up the top four G League teams against the lower NBA teams and just kick it off. But I don't know, it just feels so messy to me, and it just feels like in the NBA environment that we're in now, where exactly like we were talking about before, Kawhi Leonard resting games, now he's in the playoffs and he's playing full time minutes. Like, I don't understand why a team that is in kind of the upper echelons of the NBA would risk a superstar over a tournament that really nobody cares about.
Yeah. Like, could they have not? I mean, and the same thing, the problem with the NBA, like, we're seeing them play every other week against each other anyway for the actual title, which, as you say, is more meaningful. Could there not have been like the best? Because the basketball standard in Europe in particular is definitely growing. That you're not going to get every single superstar playing. Could you, from the NBA teams, could there be some form of Champions League-esque, best team in Serbia, best team?
Yes.
And playing that, and they come to America. I mean, end of the day, NBA is going to be king. Everyone cares more about it. So maybe it's held in America, so these European teams have to come over to minimize it. It's going to be pretty hard sell to tell the Lakers to fly over to Eastern Europe for a game in the middle of the season. But yeah, could that be more of a marketable kind of concept?
I mean, there are a million better ideas than the one that they've put forward. But I don't know. Let's see what happens, I guess, because this play-in tournament, I'm sure a lot of people thought that was going to be stupid, and that's been excellent.
It's true. It's been upsets galore. I mean, no one expected the Heat to lose their first game. Certainly not this podcast. Let's talk baseball. Baseball is 2 weeks into the season, maybe 2.5 weeks, give or take. We've seen the Tampa Bay Rays get off to a heck of a start. 14-2 as we record this. They won their first 13 games, going 13-0. One of the points that was not discussed a great deal in this story was the fact that they played the Oakland Athletics, the Washington Nationals, and the Detroit Tigers were probably the three favorites for the worst record in baseball this year. So it's while it's still impressive to win 13 games in a row, some context is needed there, I think. And there are tougher matches ahead for Tampa Bay. But yeah, I mean, what have you guys made of it? We're going along on Friday night to the Yankees Blue Jays. I think, Dave, you read some power rankings that had the Yankees, Rays, and Blue Jays as three of the top four teams all in one.
Yeah, game. Yeah. I think the Braves might have been actually number one, but then it was the next three. Yeah. So, I mean, that spices up. And I think the Blue Jays, did they actually win the series against the Rays? Was it 2-1?
Two one, yeah.
Yeah, so I mean the Blue Jays. So I mean it's when we first committed to going on Friday, like Blue Jays, Yankees, it was like seen the Blue Jays a few times, but because it's obviously a rival in the AL East, but that's a great matchup. That's a great little like early season to see, you know, where the Yankees are placed. They've had some pretty tough series on the flip side to the Rays.
Yeah, and they've just lost Stanton's out for 6 weeks now, which is a bit of a blow for them.
Are the Yankees being stitched up again with probably the hardest division in baseball? I mean, like, definitely the AL, American League. But
you do, but you don't actually play as many games within your division now. They're spreading the draw out a bit more this year. So you play everyone now. Whereas in the past, you only played teams from one division in the opposite league, which I think is a little bit like how the NFL does it, but now they've done it so that you play everyone at least once, and you play a few more games with your division, but not as many as you did before.
Look at the Major League Baseball. They're just like, you know, taking feedback. You know, it only took them 20 years of declining fan numbers to finally turn things around with pitch clocks and things like that. So, hey, I'm loving the changes.
Like, the game on Sunday, Gerrit Cole's game, I mean, admittedly, he gave up 2 hits in 9 innings. 2 hours and 7 minutes.
Nice.
For a full game of baseball.
Yeah, I honestly think, like, enough credit can't be given to finally turning this around. It took them
I think it's, like, one of the best rule changes I've seen a sport make in some time. Like, I can't remember a sport making a rule change that has made such a definitive difference to my enjoyment of the sport as much as this has. I can actually sit down and watch a game and just sort of like watch an inning, and it goes by fast enough that I'm not like, you know, it doesn't drag.
Yeah. Yeah. It's turned it back into what it should be, which is like a real afternoon, you know, watching game, you know, sit down in the sun, enjoy a few beers, watch a game. Doesn't last the whole night. But I guess kind of like out of this though, like, I mean, the Blue Jays for me are definitely going to be the one to watch. I kind of predicted them, I think, way back when we were talking about our baseball predictions at the beginning of the season. But loving what I'm seeing there. The phrase exactly like you said, science. Always these funny things about professional sports where, you know, sometimes like they just get extremely lucky and just get a lineup of extremely shit teams, and you know, some weird stats get thrown out. So I'm exceptionally happy that you called that out.
There's a very soft schedule to start the year.
Yeah, but are there any teams like you guys are both just extremely worried about, even though we're only, you know, so far into the season? But
so I mean, no one expected Oakland to be good, but they gave up 17 walks to the Mets the other day, which was pretty alarming. As far as teams are worried about, I mean, maybe the Phillies at 6-10, and I sort of think Philly will be okay, but it's tough because they're in a kind of tough division, so it's easy to get buried there. I think the team I am worried about a little bit is the White Sox, because they're kind of nearing the end of their window of contention with their current core of players. They've got a few guys, you know, coming close to expiring contracts, and they're 6-10 now. I see them just looking up at Minnesota and Cleveland in the central there, and I don't think there's a way back for the White Sox. And so I think it'll be a pretty disappointing contending window that they've had for the past sort of 4 or 5 years with not a lot to really show for it. So I'm a little bit worried that this might be the kind of the curtain coming down on their window of contention at the moment.
What about the Angels? Because they're a team that
they're good.
You know, as a casual Outside of the Yankees, I wouldn't claim to know a huge amount following the league. And, every year you're just like, you've got the two best players in the league. Why can you not be contenders? Are they, I mean, the 7-8s are reasonably, acceptable start to the season, but
8-8 now, one today.
okay.
But yeah, I
But
mean,
that,
yeah, they're fine. Like the thing is, you also just want to see guys like Ohtani and Trout in the playoffs.
exactly.
And so I am kind of rooting for them to have a good year and get back to the playoffs. I think they are better than they've been in previous years, but I mean, that's a tough division as well. Seattle and Houston were both fantastic last year and be fantastic again. Texas spent a bunch of money and they're 9-6 to start the year, so they won't be easy. So
And as we've talked about with the AL East, like you've we're not they're not playing each other as much, so you'd probably expect, the Rays, Yankee, like the in terms of the wild card spots, there's not going to be a lot of, teams. Or there's going to be not as many. There's too many good teams to be competing for not enough spots.
well, what it means is that they don't beat up on each other as much, so they don't take wins from each other as much, and so that it's yeah, it's more feasible for these teams to, even if they're in a tough division, to still get a big win total. So, I think that'd be fascinating. Really excited to see what happens with Ohtani actually, and the contract he gets next winter. Speaking of contracts. Wait, are you still an Eagles fan or are you a Jets fan?
No, I'm an Eagles fan.
Okay, you're an
I
Eagles fan.
kind of got
So
over
what do
I
you
got
make of your
over it.
quarterback getting paid today?
So
And how
that
much
so
money did he get
just
paid?
before that, just before that. So your thing that was just like a, which is probably understandable, was like a post Super Bowl
Yeah.
semi meltdown of like, I hate this team. You burnt your jerseys. Took your Jalen Hurts signed picture down, whatever. And now you're sort of like, all right, you've had time to mull over it, and you're okay. Is that?
I'm okay with it. I think the things that were kind of hard for me, like after that, was like, obviously it was just such a meltdown after such a great season, but it was just all the like the fan stuff happening in Philly, like torching cars and stuff like that, like behaving like it's a Champions League final or something like that. I don't know. It just wasn't needed. I got over it. I had a few beers, and walked it back. I kind of realized that if I was a Jets fan, Aaron Rodgers is probably going to be the quarterback this year, and I don't know if that's going to help me much anymore. But Jalen Hurts obviously got a monster contract. Now the highest player in the NFL, average of $51 million a year for the next 4 or 5 years, which is just absolutely nuts. Is it deserved? Probably. It does give me a little bit of worry though. The obvious one is that same thing happened with Carson Wentz, had an absolutely stellar MVP caliber season, and then just was the never the same again. Jalen Hurts as well, just looking at him and his production changed dramatically when AJ Brown turned up. And when you're throwing a ball to AJ Brown, DeVonta Smith and Dallas Goedert, with three running backs behind you and yourself that can run, things are obviously going to look pretty glorious. So I'm going to hold my breath a little bit with this one. I tell you one thing, though, that it really does highlight. Baltimore Ravens look like absolute idiots for not locking in Lamar Jackson. Back when Lamar Jackson was first up for contract, the highest paid quarterback in the league was Patrick Mahomes at $45 million a year. That just keeps going up and up and up. And that's going to keep going up as well, because I'll tell you two quarterbacks that are going to get paid more than Jalen Hurts is probably Joe Burrow and then Justin Herbert. So it's going to be interesting to see how this stuff shakes out for Lamar Jackson, but yeah.
In the Baltimore Ravens front office defense, because I don't know if we've been really told the full picture, but it was never necessarily the total contract. It was always about the guaranteed. That's where there was the big concern, right? Or that the lack of agreement. Because
It
and you
was.
can completely understand the Ravens front office not wanting to guarantee a guy, and it's not even the fact that he's a running quarterback, because so is Jalen Hurts. It's the fact that he's missed December, January for 2 years in a row. So that's not great timing of wanting this the largest guaranteed. Because my understanding, I think I saw today that I think there's a total guaranteed was close to 200 million. It was originally reported as 130, but I saw on what's his name, McAfee, that it was actually closer to 200. It's just similar to Hertz. It's like you get a guaranteed amount in first year, and then I think then it's guaranteed once you start your second year. So,
Yeah,
yeah.
with the Jalen Hurts contract, Deshaun Watson's obviously number one with guaranteed money because he's fully guaranteed. Hope that blows up in the Browns' face.
No, definitely has, yeah.
Yeah, then number two is Kyler Murray. So Jalen Hurts' contract is still behind Kyler Murray, and that was obviously kind of always the rumor that Lamar Jackson wanted more guaranteed money than Kyler Murray. That Kyler Murray contract just continues to look really awful, because as a short quarterback, you're always going to take more hits because you need to hang out, drop out of the pocket. So it's going to be interesting to how all this shakes out. But the two people that have got to be the most happy out of this are Joe Burrow and Justin Herbert, because that's now the floor for your contract. You're definitely going to earn more than that. Joe Burrow, 100%. Justin Herbert would be the kind of interesting one. He may, just get there or thereabouts with Jalen Hurts. Also, Jalen Hurts, something that works into his favor, he's got a no trade clause in this contract, so gives him a lot of security looking to the future there. We'll see how it works out though, because yeah, like I said, as a reborn Eagles fan, I kind of hold my breath a little bit.
Not bad being a quarterback, huh? Not bad.
No, not at all. $51 million a year.
It
Shocker.
yeah. It's just one of the it's what's the fascinating is like the Eagles have had success on rookie contracts, Carson Wentz, that's the year they won the Super Bowl. And then they made the Super Bowl last year on the rookie contract. And so it will be interesting. I mean, at the end of the day, you have to pay him. Like that's just what the market demands, and it has to happen. But when you're looking at some of these players around the league that have been paid, I'm thinking your Dak Prescott, Kirk Cousins. They haven't had a huge amount of success, playoff success. Certainly not after their contracts as well. And it's because you're eating up a lot of salary cap, and it's you struggle to kind of have all the pieces around it. So that's kind of interesting. I think the Eagles are going to have a pretty strong squad this year, but well, for the next season, it's just beyond that because you're going to have O-line players retiring or, and moving on, and yeah, and then you're going to have to pay whether it's an AJ Brown, like contracts are going to come up. That's when it becomes quite challenging.
Yeah,
Yeah.
absolutely. That Devonta Smith, as soon as he's up, which probably 3 or 4 years. It does open an interesting argument for the Eagles, though, which is in this upcoming draft, do they just go fully in and take Bijan Robinson at running back with their 10th or 11th pick there, just to
I
secure
saw
a
that in a
cheap
mock
running
draft that they
back?
might.
Yeah, that's kind of where the big question mark is, because obviously there's not a lot of value long term with running backs at the moment, but that guy is something special.
Okay. I mean that's pretty much been outlawed from ever going before the first 20 picks for a running back nowadays. But so I like that. That's basically saying, okay, we are going all in to win this year. Because is it what's the O-line guys? Lane Johnson, is it?
Lane Johnson, yep.
And Jason Kelce, like those guys are definitely long in the tooth. They're, in their mid to late 30s, so they can't have much left in the tank. So yeah, you're basically going, we're going to pick a guy at the 10th pick, knowing that in 3 years to that's a great sort of, yeah, I never thought of
Yeah.
that.
Yeah, that's honestly like as soon as I saw this contract come in, I was like, if you're gonna do this and make this work, you've just opened your window because Devontae Smith is gonna get paid in, 3 or 4 years now as well. So may as well just go all in and do it, but we'll see what happens.
Should be good. NFL draft coming up soon. What is that? End of next week?
It'll be
Halfway
like
through next week?
Thursday next week, maybe.
Thursday next week.
Yeah.
Looking forward to that.
Yeah,
Hopefully
that's
some
right.
trade action in the days and even on the night of leading up to that draft. Gents, always a pleasure, never a chore.
Especially a pleasure on episode 69.
Yeah.
Very much a pleasure. It was
Oh
our
boy.
pleasure.
Oh
What
boy. Oh
a
boy. On
way
that
to
note,
end. What a way to
yeah,
end.
bye for now.
Bye.